And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio. And welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Anyone who witnessed Savoy Brown leave the blocks in 1965 would speak of a similar epiphany. Back then, the band were the spark that ignited the blues boom, signing to Decca, opening for Cream's first London show, and boasting a lead guitarist who was being name-dropped in the same reverential breath as peers like Clapton and Hendrix, with whom Simmons jammed. Already the guitarist was emerging as the band's driving force. I had a vision, he reflects, when I started the band back in 1965. The concept was to be a British version of a Chicago blues band. And the exciting thing now is that the vision is still alive. Soon, Savoy Brown had achieved what most British bands never did, success in America, and became a major U.S. draw thanks to the high-energy material and tireless work ethic. There's far too much said about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Simmons told Classic Rock. It's a cliche. We were all extremely hard-working guys. When we came over to America, we were like a little army. I look at that time as being filled with incredible talent. Times change, of course, and by 1979, Simmons had moved from a London he no longer recognized. The punks were everywhere to settle permanently in New York. The Savoy Brown band members came and went, and the music scene shifted around him. But the guitarist stuck thrillingly to his guns and reaped the rewards, performing in iconic venues like Carnegie Hall and the Fillmore East and West, releasing 30-odd albums, and later enjoying a well-deserved induction into Hollywood's Rock Wall of Fame. Even in the post-millennium, while his peers grow soft and drift into semi-retirement, Simmons retains a vision and an edge, spitting out acclaimed albums that include 2011's Voodoo Moon, 2014's Going to the Delta, 2015's The Devil to Pay, and the emphatic new addition to Savoy Brown's catalog, Witchy Feeling. I'm amazed that I still have the energy inside me to play guitar, create music, and write songs, he considers. I've been blessed in my life, and I thank God for that. I've never been a believer in holding on to the past. I don't look over my shoulder and congratulate myself. I always want to climb the next mountain, and I'm very pleased with this new album. You can purchase Witchy Feeling, the new album by Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown, at Amazon.com. Please welcome blues rock guitarist extraordinaire, singer-songwriter Kim Simmons to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Kim.
Hi there. Thanks for such a nice introduction. Do you have any energy left yourself after that?
I'm done. I'm going to take a nap.
There's a lot of years to cover, you know.
I'm telling you, man. You know, last time we chatted, it was your 45th anniversary, and now here we are in your 50th anniversary.
Wow.
It's amazing, I can't believe it.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy looking back, you know, and but it's nice to, this is the 50th year, and actually just the very first Savoy album came out. So there's always some kind of anniversary now, you know.
You know, I can't believe you first started, back in 65, somewhere around there, right?
Well, yeah, I was 17 when I formed the band. I was 18 when we did the first singles, and I was 19 when we did the first album in 67, yeah.
But what a time, though. I mean, you're up against the British invasion, which, were you considered part of the British invasion?
I don't know. I think the British invasion was the Beatles, Dave Clark Five, you know, that kind of 1963 type of thing. I would put the Rolling Stones, I think, in that group, right? And so by 1965, like the Animals, you know, those kind of groups, Animals I grew up with. And by 1965, the London scene had moved on, and it was quite a dance scene, you know, so I think it was ready for another wave of non-dance music, you know, and I think that that was led by bands like Savoy Brown when I came along. You know, there's nowhere to play in London. I actually opened my own club in a pub, and I played every Monday. It was a blues club, and you know, started off that way, and then bit by bit the scene changed. You know, we started playing colleges. It's the same story. We all the circle turns. You know, and all of a sudden the college crowd, you know, started to understand what we were doing. We were playing colleges, and it grew from there, and then it turned into a blues boom in 1967. And everybody and their grandmother were playing the blues.
It's amazing. And you guys were the ones who brought blues back, you know, because all the, well, you know, the John Lee Hookers and, you know, those, sure. Muddy Waters, those guys, they weren't really recognized and didn't get the credit they did at that time. And you guys brought it back into the spotlight.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I think the way the history goes in England, you know, you had the Stones, of course, you know, and arguably the first blues band as such in England. But they were really referred to as an R&B band, you know, the Yardbirds, the Animals, mm-hmm. Stones. I think it was called R&B. So I think by the time I came along in the mid-60s, it, you know, we developed a little bit further. And in particular, I think Savoy Brown has a very American sound. And it was blues then, you know what I mean? We weren't called an R&B band. We were a blues band because mm-hmm. we were, you know, just things got a little bit more moved along the line there, you know. So that's where it all kind of fits in. And then I think blues kind of developed into sort of heavy metal as when you got bands like Black Sabbath coming along, you know, who probably was sort of a blues band, probably, when they very first started, you know, and then just developed a much heavier thing. So I think kind of that's how the whole British lineage goes, maybe from my perspective, anyway.
Well, I'm going to consider you guys part of the British invasion because, you know, they did say, you know, the Yardbirds were a blues band, you know, in the beginning, and a lot of them were called blues bands. So,
oh, really? Well, in the States?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I think you know, in my opinion, you're part of that. You're very, very much part of that. And, you know, even the Moody Blues were considered an R&B band in the beginning.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah. So, I'm sure I was then, you know. Good. I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of difficult to see yourself and to think of yourself as, you know, in any objective way. But, yeah, we certainly were bringing, you know, when I came over the first time, you know, we were constantly, you know, championing the blues guys that we grew up with. And as you said earlier on, mostly were unknown. And a lot, so many people have come up to me, they've become my friends now, and they found the blues from bands like Savoy Brown, and
mm-hmm.
I think Savoy Brown in particular, because we had a very, very authentic sound.
Well, last time we chatted, too, one of my favorite albums was Voodoo Moon, and we discussed that. I gave you guys 5 stars with that album. Then you guys were playing in Clearwater, Florida, at the Rock and Blues Hippie Fest, and I was looking all over the place for you. I chatted with Peter Rivera from Rare Earth and Carmine, who I've also interviewed, and I actually interviewed Edgar Winter the day before Johnny died, which was kind of ironic.
Oh.
But I couldn't find you anywhere. I was going to say hello. This was back in 2014,
man.
I think.
Where the heck was I? Well,
I don't know.
There you go. I'm a bit of a loner, so maybe I was just somewhere off in a corner somewhere.
Could be. Probably a bunch of girls had you cornered somewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's it, man. Yeah.
First of all, I want to let everyone know where Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown are headed in the next several months. You're going to be in September 23rd, you'll be at the Blue Jazz Festival, right, in Auburn?
Right, that's correct.
October 6th at the Tangier in Akron. October 7th in Fort Wayne. November 17th is my old stomping grounds, Annapolis. That was my I used to be a DJ over in Annapolis at a top 40 radio station. Ram's Head on stage. I'm very familiar with that venue. Great venue. You'll be in Sellersville, Pennsylvania on the 18th. The Montage Music Hall, Rochester on the 25th. You'll be in Buffalo on the 26th. You'll be at the Iridium Jazz Club in New York, again in New York, December 1st. And also the 2nd, you'll be in the Upper Room in Albany, December 8th. December 15th, the Bull Run in, I think, Massachusetts. And Daryl's House in Syracuse on the 16th. I get Daryl's House, is that, that's kind of a, like a club, restaurant type thing that came from Daryl Hall, right?
Yeah, I think Daryl Hall owns it, and I used to play it, you know, before it was called Daryl's House, and so it's a venue that's not too far from me, and it's one of those, you know, cool places where you can go and eat, see a show, and it's really, really a premier sort of music room.
Yeah, I watch his show. Have you been on his show?
I haven't been on his show, no.
Yeah, you should be. You should be.
I know. I'd like to. I like that all a lot. And who knows, in the future, maybe.
Right. Now, last time we chatted, too, I know you have, you still have your tremendous 45 collection. You got a great 45 collection. Do you still have that?
Yeah, I've still got most of my records, you know.
Right.
I can't access them because my garage is full up of, you know, like everybody else, you know, nonsense, you know. So somewhere, you know, I have to climb over everything. Oh, there's my record collection.
You got to climb over it? That's pretty bad.
It's bad, yeah. We've got all sorts of furniture in our garage from a family member that we're holding on to.
Okay.
Of course, it means that, you know, you have to give up something, you know.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to give up stuff, you know.
I know. It's crazy. You know, it's. I've tried not to be that way, you know, with guitars and so forth. You know, I try to not get sort of hung up on special guitars, so or equipment and that. I just try guitars can haunt you. You know what I mean? They can sound fantastic, you know, for a certain period of time, and you can write some good songs with them, and you can play well with them. And then sometimes they stop working, and then you just have to move on. It's the oddest feeling. You know?
Well, you've had a lot of guitars stolen in your past as well, right?
Yeah, sure. You know, tons of guitars stolen over all the years. You know, and that's trying to be careful too. You know. And it still goes on. I read stories all the time, you know, where bands today, you know, get everything stolen. And it's just, it's one of the things being on the road that, you know, I think that really one of the most, you know, being on the road, I think is seen from an outsider as being, oh, this is exciting and adventure and everything. But the reality is, you know, you're constantly worried about somebody stealing something, you know, and which is a terrible sort of indictment of a certain segment of people, and you can't even leave anything in the dressing room, you know. So it's very, very, you know. So that's one of the downsides of touring, is that you always have to watch for that, and even if you got your eyes wide open, somehow or other, things get stolen, and when that's happened to you a couple of times, you know, it's, in a way, it's good because it sort of breaks you of your, you know, holding on to stuff kind of thing, you know.
True.
You know,
yeah.
you know that you're going to have to move on some point in time with guitars, and I'm using a new guitar now, a Heritage guitar, and you know, guitars work for a certain period of time, and it's great. It's remarkable, really. Yeah, with some people, I suppose, keep the same guitar all their career. I'm not one of those.
Yeah, they do.
People, you know.
You can tell because it's all banged up and it's been through hell.
Yeah,
you know?
I love that kind of concept. You know, and I love those artists. I think I'm trying to be one of those guys, but you just got to be yourself. You know, so I've usually got different guitars every year. Yeah.
Oh, every year, how many guitars would you say you have? Right,
I don't have a ton of them. I know when, like, Les Paul passed away, he had, like, 900 guitars in his house. You know what
wow.
I mean? You couldn't even
wow.
move. I mean, you know, you walk in the front door, and you'd have, you know, there's a walkway from about a foot, you know, because there's guitars everywhere and everything. So, no, I've just got a variety of guitars, you know, like, but a couple of dozen guitars or something, and that's about it. So it's more than enough, you know. The reason I only hold on to them now anyway, because there'll be kind of time where they might be useful for my heirs, you know. But I, you know,
exactly.
Otherwise I'd just give them away or what have you, because, you know, I don't want too many. But anyway.
Guitars have pulled their value, you know, throughout these years. I mean, if you got, you know, like a Les Paul, like a 50s, late 50s Les Paul, man, you can buy a house with it, pretty much.
Well, you can. Well, it's like everything else, isn't it? You know, when you look back at everything, you know, the price of things have gone crazy. And certainly musicians like myself, if we'd held on to all the guitars we had, you know, you'd be a multimillionaire just
that's
on
right.
your guitars. But
right.
like everything else, you know, when you're busy living the life and when you're a part of it, you're not, most of us are not, you know, counting, you're not counting the minutes, you're not counting the hours, you're not counting the days, you're not counting the guitars, you're not, you know, writing everything, you know, in a diary all the time, you know, you're just living your life. And then you look back, we all must look back and say, damn, you know, why did I sell that $100 in McDonald's back in '66? You know?
Exactly. I tell you, it's better than the stock market owning guitars. It really is.
it really is, though.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I think with someone like myself, you know, the beauty is you've lived it. You know, so I've played all the
right.
great guitars. I've owned all the great guitars. And more than just having them to say you have them, yeah, it's much better to have said, you know, I was part of it. You know, that's part of the reason those guitars became that
exactly.
that price. I lived it, and it's a nice feeling that you know, you're part of it. Because when I came over, I was buying guitars in pawn shops for $50,
yeah, that's right.
that are now worth $500,000. You know, so you know, it and nobody knew the value of them. So it was kind of. And I got the beauty out of playing them, you know, and that's the main thing. And actually making records with them and making them work and making them breathe and live, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember you telling me the first 45 you bought was Twist and Shout by the
Isley
Brothers.
That's right, but Isley Brothers, yeah.
And the B-side was an instrumental that you loved.
That's right. It was an instrumental version of Twist and Shout with no vocals on. And, yeah. You know, it was, you know, I liked R&B, I liked all sorts of music back then. You know, I liked rhythm and blues, I liked blues, I liked jazz and rock and roll. It was all mixed in, and it wasn't
yep.
until I got to 13, 14, and I really kind of focused. And I said, you know, I want to play blues, and I want to focus on, that's going to be my, you know, that's what I'm going to collect, and that's what I'm going to study, kind of thing, you know. And
well,
I studied it, like, you know, like, I studied, well, I was lucky, you know, I grew up in the 50s with an older brother. That,
right.
But I studied music, and I still do, to a degree, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more complicated now, but, you know, I studied it as if you would go to college, and I think that it's kept me in good stead, you know, and within my genre, and I still follow all the new artists, you know, in the blues rock genre. That's really nice. That's my speciality.
Well, one thing I admire about you is you kept true to the blues and rock and roll, like kind of like Johnny Winter and John Mayall did for all these years.
Right.
You know, you didn't veer off
right.
and, you know, do anything crazy. You know, you kept your genre,
right.
and I admire that a lot about you. It that's not easy to do, you know. Especially when money's tight.
Well, that's true, you know, exactly, because your career goes up and down all the
mm-hmm.
time. It's certainly, you know, there are times when you're in demand, there's sometimes nobody cares about you, you know, and
yeah.
there's a tendency, you know, of course, everybody then around you says, oh, you know, you should play poker music, that's doing well, you know. And, yeah, so, yeah, you know, we all go through that, and you see other artists, you know, that are caught in that quandary, younger artists and so forth. And and it's fascinating, you know. I like following bands, you know, career, other bands' careers, and seeing the ups and downs and the different style changes. I think it's fascinating, you know, because I've been through it myself. And so I kind of enjoy being a fan and following other bands. And then, of course, sometimes you learn yourself. And also sometimes it helps with your own regrets, you know, because you know that we all do the same thing, you know, and make the same mistakes and so forth. By and large, I've stuck with it. I see that people are really, like yourself, and a lot of people really get that point, which I must say it makes me feel good.
You did infiltrate top 40 with Hellbound Train, which was good. You know, you made that into the top 40.
We had lots of record success, you know, and we never got the top five, the top one, and we were on the verge at one point. Mm-hmm. One of the major label, well, we were the major label, but then a major label was interested, and they promised us actually, they promised us the top five if we signed with them, you know. Back then, you know, there were some backdoor deals going on, you know. it never came to fruition. But had we made that move, we would certainly have got into the top five, which we never did. But on the other hand, I think that, you know, the fact that we had this, the degree of success we had, I think, has helped me with longevity, you know. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes bands, you know, they get to number one and blah, 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 and it's all over.
It's all over, right.
And I think the reason I've been able to survive for all these years is that never happened to me. And I think that's enabled me to have a really long career, because only a few people that get to number one, you know, are able to, keep it going with any sense of, well, turning completely mad, you know. I don't know how the Rolling Stones have managed it without going insane in the music business.
Well, one thing you got on your side is you're an incredible guitar player. I think you can't miss. You know what I mean? You're always going to be popular somewhere with being the skills that you have, because people are always looking for that, you know.
I wish I could feel that. You know, I wish I could listen to myself and feel that. And believe that, because it's, you know, believe it or not, with someone like myself, maybe some people, you can do that, but it's a lot like looking in the mirror, you know.
Right.
You just see all the warts, you know, however handsome you are, or whatever you do in life, you know, you're well aware of your own limitations. And so that's the strange thing in life, you know. It's, you can't just sit back and say, oh, I'm a great guitar player, because actual fact, you don't think that, you know.
are you happier nowadays that you have all the freedom and you can do pretty much what you want, or do you miss the days when the huge record companies and management kind of controlled things?
Well, not really. You know, I look at it now and I realize, you know, my life is in different parts. You know, lived. When I started off, the first portion of my life was successful, you know, business-wise. You know, it was very successful, and career-wise, more so than it's ever been. Then the last portion of my life has been very successful on a personal level, you know, mm-hmm. fantastic marriage and so forth, that I didn't have at the beginning, you know.
Right.
I was a mess. And in between, I had a really down time. And all of these things, you know, I appreciate, because I've done things and lived things, we all have, actually, mm-hmm. that nobody else in the world has done. And I think that's a very kind of, it's not me, someone like myself that can say that. We can all say that. We've all done things that other people haven't done. And, you know, you could say, well, I've picked up garbage for 2 or 3 years as a job, Well, 99% of the people in the world have never done that.
Right.
You know, it's an experience I'll never have. All our experiences, whether you're a, you know, a blues rock guitar player of renown, or whether anything, you know, often as not, our experiences are completely unique to us. 99% of the world has never done a lot of what we've done. Like, I've never been a DJ. You know, it's an experience I'll never have in my life, and that's something that very few people have. And so I think we have to cherish the good and the bad in our lives, what we have done, because inevitably nobody else has done that, you know. And and that's a realization I came to, you know, in my old age. But anyway, the first, you know, portion of my year it was the career thing, and then the down part in the middle, and then the second portion has been a wonderful, you know, personal life. It's been great, and at the same time, I've had my career exactly as I've wanted it. But I've had it in perspective. You know, in the early days, my career was like this gigantic monster, you know what I mean, that was
right.
Taking your life over. And and I managed to keep that monster in a cage. You know, right now it's in a cage. It wants to get out all the time. You know, but I just take my life all over. It's not longer to keep me this way.
Well, you've been perseverance is everything, and you stuck to your guns. You continued to tour. You never gave up. And I talked to Dave Edmonds, and Dave Edmonds says he was, you know, kind of permanently semi-retired most of his life, you know. Another great guitar player, but, you know, he just thought, I don't know, it just never worked as good as it did for you and Savoy Brown for some reason, you know. I don't know if he didn't have the people behind him or what.
Well, no, I just think that I was, you know, I wanted a great desire to get out in front of the people, a great desire
yep.
to play, you know, no matter what. Whatever it's going to take, I am going to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just that drive, that desire to want to be in front of people.
Exactly. Yep.
That, you know, I'm going, you know, is there a blues bar on the corner? Yeah, put me in there. I'm going to play the blues bar on the corner, you know.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
You know, so it was, I wanted to be those, it's just who you...
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you define your career, how you think of yourself. You know, I remember all the great, and it's the dream. What kind of dream you have?
Right.
You know, you're following a dream, and you know, it sometimes you don't quite realize what the dream is. You know, the dream I followed wasn't to be a pop star. You know, wasn't to be a huge. Yeah, a guy at number one, actually. You know, that wasn't my dream. You know, my dream was to be a respected musician.
Sure.
And my dream was to be one of those guys that you had to look to find. And, you know, that, believe it or not, that was my dream. You know, sure enough, that's the dream I'm living. And so most of us have a dream. Well, I can't too philosophic if I can do in a hurry. You know, most of us have a dream, but sometimes we don't recognize what that dream is.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
with you.
Yeah, you've got to know what your actual dream inside is, and then not be disappointed. Oh, why aren't I the biggest pop star in the world? Well, guess what? That, inside, that isn't your dream. You know, so I quickly realized, you know, what I was about, and I quickly realized that I was exactly where I should be in the world. And it makes things a lot easier. Then you're not looking around saying, you know, hey, why aren't I number one? Or why aren't you? Because, wanted to be number one.
Exactly. Well, the main thing, you're enjoying yourself. You enjoy what you're doing, and that says it all right there, I think.
Well, I think so. You know, I think this morning, every morning I get up, I go to my studio. Every morning I want to play. You know, every morning I want to, you know, that's a very nice feeling to have.
Yeah.
Something kind of a work, really. You know, it's work. You know, something that you want to get up and you want to do.
Yeah.
And luckily, being a musician, you know, I can keep doing it until I keel over. But that's the case with most jobs, probably. If you really want to do it, you can just keep. You know, if and so that's it's it's not so much the what I do as a job. It's the fact that, you know, I want to keep doing it, you know, and and then, you know, of course, don't, you know, I don't want to give everybody the feeling that, you know, this is all hunky-dory. I mean, I would say every week I'm going to pack it in. You know what
right.
I mean? That's
sure.
a flip side, because it's sure. enormously hard work. It's enormously, you know, taxing, the whole thing. So, you know, I'd like people to, you know, to understand that. Well, like in anything, there's the big picture is fantastic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, you know, this guy's done this for 50 years. He's a rock and roll star, you know. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But, you know, and that's what I have to keep focusing on. That's what we all have to focus on.
Exactly.
You know, because when you focus on the small picture, it's, you know,
right.
hey, you want to sit in the car for 12 hours and drive to Chicago,
yeah.
You know, join the crew, you know. Yeah. It's like, and you want to, you know, it's, and that's just one of the small things. But you can't focus on that, you know. I've always focused on the big picture, and the big picture is somewhere is going to be really inspired by your music. Someone's inspired by you. You've
right.
made a difference in somebody's life, you know.
Yep.
And so that's the big picture. And as hard as it becomes sometimes, you know, I kind of keep the small picture at bay, and just look at the big picture and realize that. And if we all do that, I think it's a much better way of living than getting caught up in the details.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm an author, and it's the same thing pretty much. I don't write. I write because I enjoy it, and maybe it'll touch somebody one day. I don't write just to be a best-selling. You know, I don't write for the money. I write because
right.
I enjoy it, you know.
Right, right.
And I like the craft.
Exactly.
Is,
and then if
yeah.
if it goes somewhere, well, isn't that a treat?
It's
you
a
know.
Bonus.
And
it's a bonus.
And that's the way I paint. I paint like
yeah.
that. I can paint in a very artistic way, or I can paint in a you know, like a dime dollar book way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell the truth, I get more fun of painting a dime dollar book way, you know, than I do like going for the art of it. You know, it's
yeah.
like more fun to just, you know, to just, you know, not to sort of get, I've already got an art out there, you know what I mean? So, well, I have to work extremely hard to make it into art. So why make other things, you know, the same
sure.
way? So I do tend to when I'm painting, I just enjoy making the pulp artwork. You know, it gives me great fun.
I like your artwork. You draw a lot of acoustic guitars, right? You paint a lot of acoustic
guitars. Well, yeah,
guitars?
And
yeah.
that's the stuff that I would say is the arty side
mm-hmm.
of me. You know, and
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden now you know. This is your theme, is painting abstract guitars, and now you get into this thing of, you know,
mm-hmm.
are you going to repeat yourself, you know what I mean? You've got to do something different, you
right.
can't just churn it out like a factory. All of a sudden, it becomes quite a formidable task, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be original, you know. And
sure.
that's why sometimes, to get away from that, I'll just paint pulp paintings, you know what I mean, and whatever you want to, whatever the expression is for them, because, you know, I don't want to constantly be in that sort of headspace where you're trying
right.
to create art, you know what I mean, and
exactly.
I've got that with songs. I'm constantly, you know, trying to get the right blend of blues and rock and roll, and trying to get the right, say the right statement, and say what I really feel, and it's, you know, it's extremely hard, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
I don't want my life to be completely hard work.
I want to talk a little bit about Witchy Feeling, the new album. I really, really
okay.
enjoyed that album. You've been on, is it Roof Records? R-U-F.
Yeah.
That's the German pronunciation, I guess, is Roof, right?
Yeah.
You got a lot of good great artists on Roof Records. I was fortunate to interview another blues guitar player, Albert Castillo, who's he gets very popular in this area, in the Tampa
He's
Bay
great.
Area. Yeah,
He's
good
great.
Guitar player. Samantha Fish and Devin Altman is also on that label.
Oh, fantastic.
Your current band is you on guitars, keyboards, harmonica, vocals. Pat DeSalvo, he's the bassist. And is it Garnett Grimm on drums?
That's
your current band. Your voice on this album is a cross between Mark Knopfler, Eric Burdon, and hints of Tony Joe White and Roy Buchanan. How's that?
Well, that's some of the people I'm listening to. It wouldn't surprise me that some of these ones came out. Right. That's great.
I hear all of that.
But that's my music, baby.
It's a great album. I love it. I love it. Some of my favorites is I Can't Stop the Blues. Very cool lyrics. Great riffs. I love Witchy Feeling. Like I said, you know, kind of very Roy Buchanan in a way. Guitar Slinger is great. I mean, that to me should be a top 40 hit right there. Awesome guitar playing, of course. Great finish at the end. And Vintage Man, which you have awesome slide on there. I'm a vintage man. I can't help it. And you kind of said you're not kind of a vintage man, right? You don't hang around in the past or that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a vintage man in everything, in the terms of, you know, I prefer to drive vintage cars. I prefer to wear vintage clothes, you know, ideally,
okay.
You know.
So
really, I prefer to, all the music I listen to, you know, is, I don't listen to the fashionable music at all, you know. I listen to all the music I grew up with, the vintage stuff, you know.
So you are a vintage man.
Oh, I'm definitely a vintage man. It's just I don't live in the past. There's a difference between being a vintage
right.
man and living in the past. I am a vintage man, you know, like I'm a 60s guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you say, well, do you want to drive a 79 Cadillac or do you want to drive a 2017, you know, Kia or something, you know, I'll say, no, give me the 79 Cadillac, you know,
yeah,
because I like old things. I've always been that way. I always drove old cars in England. You know, in England in the 70s, I would be driving cars from 10 years earlier in the early 60s or the 50s, you know.
Right.
I like that. You know, I've always been, so I am definitely a somewhat autobiographical thing, you know, for sure, you know, and I've got an old record player that I listen to my old vinyl on, you know, so, and it's not a like, super duper, you know, hi-fi system, it's a record player, you know.
Like when you were growing up, right?
Right, that's what I want, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I listen to my albums on a record player, and because I still remember to this day playing a 78.
Yep.
My brother had 78, so I still remember playing Little Richard 78 on an old record player, and nothing in the world has ever sounded so incredible
as
a 78 on a record player. It's just incredible, and yeah, you could put that, you know. And I've got a friend of mine in England that has a great, really great old jukebox, and he's got all the old stuff on it. And when we play a Jimmy, when you listen to a Jimmy Reed 45, you know, like Bright Bright Speaks Through, and you play anything else, it's good. But when you play it on that jukebox, man, it just sounds like, you know, $1 million, you know.
Right.
So I think the old record players, jukeboxes, that's how I like to listen to my music. You know?
Kim, I have a jukebox with all 45s.
Oh, man.
and like you said. Yeah. It's they got that echo chamber effect, and you know, sometimes you hear mistakes in it. But it's awesome. Nobody can reproduce that kind of sound we had in the 60s, you know?
No,
top 40 radio. Yeah.
It can't be done. And then you've got the what is it, the aesthetics of it as well. You know, you're actually looking at a jukebox. You know, the aesthetics also come into play as well. It's a piece of art, you know.
It is,
and so now you're everything is in place.
I think technology moved too quickly. You know, they just got rid of things, you know, way too fast. and moved on to the next. And now we got everything on a phone, which I don't like.
Well, yeah, I know, exactly. Well, it's all very well, I think, to move it. The technology is fine, but we can't lose art. You know, like, it back in the, even when you drive along, I do a lot of driving, and sometimes you'll go down into the area we've seen on a highway that was designed by, you know, some a terrific guy in the 1930s. And there's art to everything around you. There's art to the way the trees were planted. You're on a highway, but there's art to the overpasses are in brilliant, mountain stone and stuff like that. Now, that's expensive, and perhaps we can't do it like that. But I think that certainly what happens is the art gets left out of it. It's all just to be functional, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think if technology is great, but if all it is to be functional and to make it easier, blah, 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 then I do think we're missing something there.
I think technology is
great, but let's not forget that, there's a little bit of art that we should put into the design and so forth.
I agree 100% on that. Do you play Vintage Man live on your tour?
Oh, yeah. We play it live, and if I do an interview, talk to you right now, and you bring that up, that reminds mm-hmm. me, because I did drop it recently, so I should bring mm-hmm. it back in.
That's a great
and,
tune.
But what happened was I road-tested all the songs, and mm-hmm. The album was 2 years in the making. I Guitar Slinger was the first song I wrote,
right.
And we tested out with the crowd 2 years ago, and all of a sudden everybody reacted to it. And we did Vintage Man, that was one of the early ones. Everybody mm-hmm. liked it. So then I realized, hold on, I'm writing some good stuff here. It's connecting with the audience. And we did that with most of the album. So it took a long time. And, mm-hmm. and in the meantime, you don't have anything to promote. So but the benefits is you put the time and effort into it. Some of the songs were good, but we didn't understand them properly, and we had to rearrange them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the songs really, really benefited because had we gone in and just recorded it as is, we wouldn't have understood it, and it wouldn't have been the correct arrangement. So we did a luxury, really. You know, we spent 2 years doing the album. We spent 2 days recording it, but we spent two years, putting it together. And it was a luxury that I wouldn't want to do again. Mm-hmm. The next one, I've already started writing the next one. I want to get it out next year.
Awesome.
And that's a lot of effort to put into mm-hmm. something, that a lot of time.
Well, Thunder, Lightning, and Rain is another good track for a live audience. That's another good, great track for a live audience.
That goes fantastic live. And that was a ballad when I first started playing on stage. I thought, this is a ballad. We did it as a ballad a couple of times. The YouTube's with it as a ballad. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, this is not quite working. Should I drop the song? And the next thing it was like, why not try it with a down and dirty boogie feel? And,
mm-hmm.
and it
sure.
came to life, But so there's another thing about understanding what you've got, understanding what the lyrics are,
right.
understanding how you can express it
right.
more than, so it worked. Well, thank you. That's one I've definitely is a part of the show.
Great album. Close to Midnight is a instrumental, which I love. And I'll give the album a 5 stars. That's okay. I mean, it's another winner. Another
Thank
winner
you.
From Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown. It's incredible. Really, really enjoy it. God. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thank you.
I'm going to talk about some fun Kim Simmons facts now. How about that?
Go ahead. I'm not too excited about this. What's the way you're going to say? Go on.
Okay, we all know you're a painter. And,
right.
and most of your work, what I've seen is really cool stuff with acoustic guitars. And you also sell your paintings as well, right? I saw there's a site, www.ardtgallery.com/Kim, Simmons.htm, and that's where I saw a lot of your stuff. Now,
right.
You do have things for sale, right?
Yeah, that's a gallery that covers all my stuff, and then occasionally larger pieces there, and quite often I'll put the smaller pieces for sale on the website, so they can come direct to me to buy, and that way they get a small piece within anybody's pocket, so I do try to make it accessible like that. So there's the website, and there's nothing on the website now, but there will be. I have three or four that I'm about to put up. So if anybody's interested in the artwork, yes, they could go to that gallery you mentioned, commercial gallery. They could go to the website, and they could even write directly to me via the Savoy Brown website if they're interested in. So it's something I could pursue or make something of, but my main thing is playing guitar and struggling with that side of the artistic world, I do try to paint on a daily basis if I can. It's different than with guitar playing. With guitar playing, doesn't matter how I don't need inspiration to play guitar. I can pick up the guitar, I can play it.
Yep.
And with the art, I have to sort of wait for the inspiration. I really have to put myself in that inspired place to paint, because it's not something I've done since I was 13.
Right.
So it's, it's a lot of fun to do, but I don't want to make it like a factory, where I'm churning out these paintings, So
you don't want to make it a career.
No, I don't want to make it a career. I don't want to make it a job,
Yeah, exactly.
I've already got a job, playing the guitar. Like most people, it's like, that's not a job playing guitar, It's like, guess what? Believe it or not, it is. It is a ton of hard work, because but of course, if you haven't done it, it's like everything else, you think, I'd like to play golf. You're on a golf course playing, blah, blah, blah. And then you realize, 5% of all golfers in the world have been successful. It's like, you're beating your brains out,
I know. Frustrated.
So all the great jobs of the world, they're great for sure. But you better make sure you know what you're signing on for.
Exactly. Well, that's the other thing. You're back to playing golf again, too, right?
Well, I've tried to. I played a little bit in this year, but I'm finding it difficult to do that because I'm so committed to playing guitar, and if I'm going to try some other, hobbies or whatever you would call them, what you will, I'll paint, But I've gone back to reading. I read an awful lot.
Yes, you do.
Of course, I quit school at 15 to become a guitar player, so I didn't have any extra education, but I've educated myself freely, by the way, by going to the library. So I've read just about anything you want to name,
Amazing.
And I forgot all about that when especially the last 10 years, with the computers came in, and all of a sudden, I had stopped going to the library because I was getting information from my computer. But then I realized, one of my greatest hobbies, and again, it benefited me enormously, was going to the library and just wandering around and just picking books at random. That would suddenly would appeal to me. So it could be a history book, it could be a geography book, it could be a biography, it could be a novel. Just walk around and get things. And so normally I've got three or four books that I'm working on, and it's a great hobby of mine. I love the English language, and so it's so that's you know, so I suppose I'm a vintage man then, because who reads books anymore? Not many people.
That's true. Yeah, and you try to read about 4 books a week, which I'm impressed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I read a ton of stuff, you know, yeah. And I'm reading a book right now on King Charles I. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a history book. I've got an autobiography by Bob Hope. One of his from the 1940s, a really
old book.
Yeah,
I like autobiographies.
Book.
I love autobiographies.
Yeah, I so do I. I read a lot of other artists. You know,
well, I'm going to send you my book, yeah, so you can read it.
Okay, and there you go. You're an author, so I want to be.
You'll enjoy it.
I definitely would love to. I would love to. Yeah.
Sure. The other thing you do, you cook. Your specialty is paella, and you love Indian curry.
Oh, yeah, Indian curry. I've got that down, though. It took me a lifetime to figure it out. But I know. I can do paella. I can do the curries. And, in fact, tonight, you know, I'm going to, you know, once a week, it's the Simmons night of Simmons House, and I'll do a curry, and it's pretty good, if I say so myself. So, yeah, so cooking is fun. And it's creative as well, you know, so that's something. Yeah, so there you go. Pretty much like what everybody does, you know.
You do a lot. You're a Renaissance man.
Well, who knows? Who knows? But
and the important thing that you can do all these things is because you exercise every day. You say you do stretches, sit-ups, push-ups, and knee bends.
Yeah,
and,
what I do. Yeah, but, yeah exactly. But I only do 15 minutes a day. I'm not a believer in
that's
you
all
know,
you need to do, though. Yeah.
Do you think so? Yeah,
I think so.
You know, you just watch what you eat, and you do a little bit. You don't overtax yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just keeps yourself fit, really. So, I do a little bit of that, always have done, you know, and I'm not crazy with it. So, we've all got our routines. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always interested in what other people's routines are, actually, because maybe I could steal something from them.
Now, you mentioned something about cigars. Are you do you smoke cigars as well?
I had to pack the cigars in, but I used to smoke cigars, but
right.
I had to pack those in just from a health standpoint.
Okay.
But yeah. I had to pack the drinking in from a health standpoint. So, you know, and those are, you know, I tell you, when you don't drink and when you can't have a nice cigar, then life isn't so, enjoyable. But
mm-hmm.
Like everything else, as you get older, you've got to let things go. So
that's true.
And that's just part of growing. That's part of the aging process. And I like you know, good whiskey, and I used to like good whiskey, and I used to like good cigars. Yeah, no, doesn't leave much. And what else? It doesn't leave much when you start dropping off these.
I know
these things. You know, I mean, I know it's terrible.
You don't drink a little wine once in a while?
No.
Hey,
I'm a rocker. You kidding me? I mean, growing up, you know, when you're a big success at 17. Let me tell you, that carries on for like 10 years. You know, you drink a lot of wine, you know, and you have a lot of you enjoy life, believe me, to the fullest. And so there just came a time when I had to leave it behind. I enjoyed it a little too much.
Well,
but
how
hey.
About-
I'm glad I did it when I was young.
Right. How about the Foghat wine? Have you tried that?
They've given me bottles of it. I know, and I've been to the wine, or at least I've met what do they call the guy that runs the winery? You know, out in California. Yeah, no, Roger's got this whole thing going. Yeah,
I know.
Great, he's got this great bottle of. He's got this wine thing. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, and I know that's great.
I've had Roger on the show, and he makes these special appearances at wine tasting events and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's kind of neat. He's really proud of that wine.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's, you know, he's a very special person, you know, to me, and it's a lot of love there, and so I wish, you know, I wish him the best of that. He's doing great with it, you know. So, yeah.
You guys both live in New York, don't you? Don't you both live in New York?
Yes, we do, actually. No, you mentioned it, yeah. And I think he's got a place in Florida as well, so he goes down there. And that's my next thing, really, is to look at perhaps having, you know, spending more time down in Florida. I have a daughter that works for Disney down in Orlando, so we're quite often down in Florida now. So maybe we'll do something ourselves. Like, actually, we got stuck in this hurricane last week. You know, we were down there on vacation.
Are you where? You know, Florida in Orlando?
We ended up in Orlando, but we were down in Miami. We had to evacuate Miami. It took us a day to get to Orlando. We were a part of the evacuation. It was incredible. So then we got to Orlando, where our daughter was, and we stayed and rode out the hurricane there, which was a little scary. We weren't quite sure what was going to be coming in, but it had gone down to Category 1 by the time it hit us in Orlando. And then, of course, we were stuck. We couldn't fly out or anything, so... It's quite the experience to be, you know, early on in the conversation, you know, 99% of people never experienced a hurricane. So I can say, yeah, now I've experienced the hurricane.
You know, that was the largest evacuation in U.S. history.
Was it really?
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
It was crazy because at one point I had filled up quite a bit earlier before before we even knew there was a hurricane. So I had a full tank. But even then... I was really nervous, and I was very lucky to get gas. So,
I'm in the Sarasota area, and we were supposed to get a direct hit coming up from Fort Myers, and at last minute went to Lakeland, so we got a Category 2 at the most, but the winds were pretty strong, very very strong, and now we got Maria out there.
I know.
There's another one coming. Yeah.
Anyway, you just have to move to New York. Get away from it.
I know. I got family in New York. That's not a bad idea. Kim, here's your last question, okay? If you had a Field of Dreams wish like the movie to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, and here we go, talking about the past again, who would that be?
It would be different... Every day you ask me that question. But, you know, the first person that slotted right into my head, and this is odd, was Mick Jagger. You know?
Mick, really?
And, I think because, obviously, I bought the Stones' first record when I was maybe 14 years old. Come on. And they made a blues album, which did very well for them.
Yep.
And so it would be great to sit down with him and make a blues album with him. Be, you know, so there you go. That's one of those. You know, dreams, you know, that we all have, you know.
Do you know Mick?
I don't.
Really?
No.
You don't know
no,
Mick?
No, so those are two of fantasy.
You know, it's funny how humble rock stars can be. I talked to Johnny Anderson from Yes, and he met George Harrison one time, because I asked him, have you ever met any of the Beatles? I said, well, what did you and George talk about? He said, I didn't talk about anything. I says, why not? He says, because he's a Beatle. I was too nervous. I said, come on, John. You're the lead singer from Yes, you know?
Right.
You know? So it's funny how you got your own heroes, you know?
Yeah, you got your own heroes. And really, when it comes down to it, we're all fans.
Exactly.
You know, and whoever you are, you're all a fan of music. And that's why you started playing, because you're fans.
That's right.
And it just so happens, suddenly you find yourself, whatever position you're in, you know, but really, you're still a 14-year-old, you know. Keith Richards is still a 14-year-old inside, you know what I mean?
He's a fan. Yeah. He's amazing.
I think I told you the story that John Lee Hooker's guitar player said to me, John picked him up at the airport one day in San Francisco, and John Lee Hooker was playing Savoy Brown CD. You know, so it was like, you know, who would have thought that? You know, so we're all fans of music, of other artists, and but that's always something to remember, that it's all about the music for most of us. You know?
Exactly. I got a great book that it's finished that includes over 50 interviews with, guys like you, all the legends. And you're in the book, I think, from the first interview that we did together.
It was a good
interview. Right. It was a lengthy interview. But it's, the title, I changed it a couple of times, but now it's Radio Killed the Rock Star, because radio made the rock star, and then it killed it by bringing in all this crap on mainstream radio.
And
it goes into a lot of different things. But what's interesting about it is all the artists talking about their heroes, and they just spill their guts. I talked to Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull about religion and politics. Nobody ever talked to Ian Anderson about religion and politics. And he was very open about it. As you get older, you things just come out.
You can't hide it anymore.
The truth comes out when the older you become.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing you need to do. You need to write a book.
Yeah, I know. That keep saying that to me, and I'm very close to doing it. Yes, I'm very close to doing it. I'd like the luxury to take time off to do it. I'd like to say, okay, I'm not going to do gigs. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to go into to write. Take the rest of the day off, But of course, that's a luxury very few people can afford. So that would be the ideal way, because otherwise, I'm writing it in between. Practicing this morning, right? Talking to you now, and cooking for the family tonight, and somehow or other you're going to write a book. Well, that's not me anyway. I'm not one of these guys that can multitask like that. So, but it's definitely getting closer, and I think I get a theme going at some point, and. But please let me know how I get a copy of your book, and I'll gladly purchase one to support you. So don't send me a comp or anything. Let me know how I can support you in some way. So I can
get my own copy.
So maybe with Debbie, you could send the tell us what's the title, blah 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 blah. Okay.
You know what would be cool if you became an author is not to write most rock stars write a bio or autobiography. You can do that, but if you did like some fiction, that would blow everybody away, write some fiction, a Harry Potter thing or something really, imaginative, something really cool like that. That would blow everyone away, I think.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. I never thought of that. So that's another good idea. Well,
you'd be good at it because you're well read. You've read so many books. I mean, it's just going to come naturally to you, I think.
I've often thought of that. I've often thought that, I think we all do, but I've often thought in that respect, that I could have been an author. And sometimes I think it would have suited me better because it's a more lonely thing, pastor.
Very lonely.
And I'm a bit that way, I often think, I wonder if my life would have been, different and had I approached writing, because that was always a very, very strong point. Even when I was at school, before I left, it was, back then, the English tests always had, you had to write a free-form story.
Right.
And
exactly.
That always saved the English exam for me, because I could pull off, now you mentioned it, I could always pull off an imaginative short story off the top of my head. So they would give you a subject within the test, and that nobody knew, and you had to write, whatever, 1,000 words on that. So I think I knew right there that something was going on, but of course I didn't pursue it because I picked up the guitar. But now you bring it up, it goes in the back of my mind, and perhaps I don't want to find out, at my age, oh man, I can actually write really well. Why didn't I do that?
Yeah, it'll be fun too, it'll
but
be
it
very
be
enjoyable.
Fun, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it could well be.
Kim, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it for all the great music. Witchy Feeling, the new album is terrific, 5 stars. Good luck with the album and the upcoming concert dates.
Thank you, sir, and I will be in touch as usual.
Okay, Kim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can purchase Witchy Feeling, the brand new album by Kim Simmons and Savoy Brown at Amazon.com. For more information and concert dates for Savoy Brown, visit www.savoybrown.com. You can also visit Savoy Brown on Facebook at www.facebook.com/SavoyBrown65/timeline or on Twitter at https://twitter.com/SavoyBrown. Very special thanks to Howard Wolfling of Howlin' Wolf Media for arranging this interview with Kim Simmons and to Doug and Don Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions, would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Remember, you can listen to every episode of The Ray Shasho Show at https://bbsradio.com/The Ray Shasho Show, or just plug in The Ray Shasho Show on YouTube, and all the episodes are right there for you to enjoy. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and the Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street. Proud.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show.